kwakuwamfamnyako nauvuku naundukufu ata milele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Welcome, everybody, to the very first episode of Radio Harambe. I am your host, Dave McBride, coming to you from the Jumbo Everyone Studios. But somewhere in the world is my co-host, Safari Mike. Safari Mike, how are you today?
Jumbo, I'm very excited for the first Radio Harambe podcast.
Yeah, it is an exciting thing. I hope we could get them out on a regular basis. I know it's got to be difficult when we're trying to track you down somewhere in the jungle and a place like that. But I must say, the Wi-Fi service is fantastic from wherever you are.
Yes, that's right. Well, it's a new world.
So the format of the show is going to probably change as time goes on. But I figured for the first one, we'll do some news here. And then we're going to do a little feature story at the end. We're going to talk some news around Disney's Animal Kingdom. We're going to talk some news around Walt Disney World. And then at the end of the show, we're going to give you our tips with July 4th weekend and the crazy July crowds coming up. We're going to give you our tips for touring Disney's Animal Kingdom during crazy busy days. So we will start right now with the local news. And that is news from Disney's Animal Kingdom. First up, the biggest thing really, and I think we're probably going to touch on this a little bit more when the world news comes, is the Fast Pass Plus, which comes out of my mouth well. But with the Fast Pass Plus coming, which again we'll talk about a little bit later, what they've done as a result, it seems, to this is add Fast Pass to existing attractions now. And we'll talk the reason why in a second. But for now, what we know is Fast Pass is available at Expedition Everest, Kilimanjaro Safaris, Dinosaur, Primeval World, Kali River Rapids, and It's Tough to Be a Bug. Those have already had Fast Pass systems, right? Though It's Tough to Be a Bug, I think, was probably not used very often.
Yeah, that's always been there, but like you said, it's hardly ever been used, and for good reason. There's really no reason to get a Fast Pass for It's Tough to Be a Bug.
Right, but now they've added to this Festival of the Lion King, and strange that they've done that, and since this is testing and we're expecting a new theater for Festival of the Lion King, yet they've still added the system to the existing one. Finding Nemo the Musical and the new Adventurers Outpost Meet and Greet have all been added to those. Does that information sound correct to you?
That is correct. That is absolutely correct.
Now, not to sound cynical here, but there really is no good reason to add Fast Pass to It's Tough to Be a Bug, Festival of the Lion King, or Finding Nemo the Musical. We can agree on that, correct?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
And that they're only doing it because, and you correct me if you've heard different, but it seems to me with this Fast Pass Plus system that they need to be able to offer people a Fast Pass when it comes to this reservation system that they're doing. So they have to have something, whether it's needed or not, they have to have something.
Correct. They have to have enough attractions as Fast Pass attractions to have people to sign up for.
Right.
You know, and the shows themselves, I mean, listen, as you were getting at, the Festival of the Lion King, the Finding Nemo Theater, I don't know if they ever filled the capacity, even during, you know, maybe on Christmas Day or,
right,
you know, July 4th weekend, maybe on the, you know, middle of the afternoon ones. But you could pretty much be assured that you're getting in there, and there's really no reason to get a Fast Pass for there. Now, how that affects the system, and you know, people who are going to start, you know, people who don't know better may say, "Hey, you know, let's sign up for the Festival of the Lion King show at 12:30, and we'll sign up for the Finding Nemo show at 5 o'clock, and this
right,
is great, blah blah blah." And that sort of benefits the people who quote unquote are in the know. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I think they just listed it for the purposes of having enough attractions, because really there's only four attractions out of that list that I would ever get a Fast Pass for.
four, maybe five, depending on what time of year. I mean, Everest, Safari, definitely for sure. Time of year, I think you'd probably put, certainly now, you'd put Dinosaur, Primeval World, and Cali, I would think now. At least with Cali River Rapids, you're not wasting it. If you're trying, you know, if you want to go in the middle of the day when it's really hot, because that's the time you want to get drenched, then, you know, for this month, it works.
See, I can't remember the last time. And listen, I don't really go during the height of July or, you know, Christmas Day. But I never get fast passes for Dinosaur. I mean, there's really no reason to. You pretty much walk on. You pretty much walk right in there and go see Felicia Rashad. You very rarely get into the to the museum section anymore. The four I had were Everest, Kilimanjaro Safari, Kali River Rapids, because those get lines. And Adventurer's Outpost. I've noticed that the lines that have been about 30 minutes now.
Yeah.
I would much rather have, if that was my thing, to go see, you know, Mickey dressed up as a safari guide. I think it's more important to get fast passes for that than it is for Dinosaur or even Primeval World.
I agree. And I think that's great because those, and I think that's true across the board. If they're, again, you know more about this than I do, but when it comes to the fast pass pluses being added to the other attractions, the other parks, if they're doing that across the board with some of the, you know, more popular meet and greets, that's great because the meet and standing online for a meet and greet has got to be a miserable thing. I mean, I don't have kids. You do. I've never done it. But I can only imagine that if you have a 35, 45 minute wait, it's got to be, you know, equivalent to an hour long wait on a decent queue.
Yeah, that's it's well, the Adventurer's Outpost, you know, it's a little bit more interesting than some of the other queues for, but a lot of them you're just standing outside. You know, the one at the Main Street is pretty good too for to see Mickey at I forget the name of the theater off the top of my head, but yes, you're right. It is a little bit more difficult, and you know, the payoff for adults might not be the same as it is, you know, going on Everest. I mean, I'm all for meeting, you know, characters and stuff on occasion, but it's sort of not the same in terms of thrills as the safari ride or Everest. Plus, it's a lot shorter. I mean, really, you're really only there for like a minute as opposed to, you know, a 45-minute Kilimanjaro safari ride.
I agree. So so that's the new system. You're going to see some of these things going up now. We can discuss maybe later on whether or not we think this is a good investment, but we'll get to that later. The next story is, this is just a quick one. I've been told, though I haven't seen it, that the bus stops have been changed. The Disney Resort bus stops have been changed and have been added to, I believe, as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a person like me and you work on muscle memory, you've come to these places so often and you just walk and, I look up this time, at least for the – here's my tip of the day. Look at the board of where the buses are supposed to be because they have changed. And also this story, which is – you know, a little bit bragging for the first, I think to me it is for the first episode of Radio Harambe is a couple of weeks old, but I figured I'd mention it anyway. The Themed Entertainment Association, the TEA, they do a yearly global attractions attendance report. And they just released at the beginning of this month, earlier in June, they just released their rankings once again for the previous year, for the year of 2012. And Disney's Animal Kingdom comes in seventh for the world's most attended theme parks. And just so you know what that means, at the number one is the Magic Kingdom. Number two is Disneyland. Three is Tokyo Disneyland. Four, Tokyo Disney Sea. Five, Disneyland Paris. Six, Epcot. And seven, Disney's Animal Kingdom. So that means, without factoring in any of the universals that have been getting so much buzz and everybody talking about, Disney's Animal Kingdom is the second most attended in the United States, the second most attended theme park that is not a Disneyland-style park. Does that make sense? So you have the Disneyland-style parks, then Epcot, and then Disney's Animal Kingdom.
Did you say in the United States?
In the United States.
Okay.
So I'm going to throw away the Paris and the Tokyo ones because
Paris is a Magic Kingdom-like park.
Yeah. And so is Tokyo Disneyland. So if you take it in the world, it is the third most attended non-Disneyland-style theme park on the planet. And it's up 2.2%. It always – for the last, I would say, about 3 years or so, I think probably going back to 2009 or 2010 is when it – jumped over Disney's Hollywood Studios, and they've always been right there, like within, you know, within 100,000 people attending, in the 9 to 10 million mark, always somewhere in there. So the next time, folks, you hear somebody say Disney's Animal Kingdom is a half day park or one that people don't like, just point them at this number here. That's all I have to say on that one.
Well,
any comments?
Yeah, well, the one thing that oppresses me the most about it is that the Hollywood Studios has Star Wars weekends in May, right, where they get a boatload of people on those days.
Or we thought.
And they also, what was that?
Or we thought, we assume, yeah.
Well, I don't think there's any question that they get a boatload of people for those days. And they also get, they get a lot of people to go see Osborne Family Lights, or Holiday Lights, I should say, during Christmas season. That's like a big thing. So even when you factor in, you know, those two major events that bump attendance at those times of the year, Animal Kingdom still beats it, which is surprising to me.
But here's the thing. Everyone who looks at this stuff, everyone who examines theme parks, right? Certainly in our business, in the podcasting world, in the website world, they think of it in terms of how long it takes to wait on how many attractions. They think of things in terms of lines. Disney's Animal Kingdom doesn't really do that. So if there were more people at Disney's Animal Kingdom than there were at Disney's Hollywood Studios every day of the week for a month in a row, you wouldn't really know it, because people aren't clamoring to get on every little attraction. You know, they're not, that's just not what people do there. They kind of wander around, they kind of explore, they go through walkthroughs. I mean, you think about a person spending a whole day at Disney's Animal Kingdom. How much time do they spend on an attraction waiting in line? They only spent, you said it, 4 or 5 things. The rest of the time they're doing something else, and you can't quantify that. You can't, you know what I mean? You can't examine that.
Right.
From a point of view other than this, which is to look at attendance figures.
That's true.
And the final story in the local news here, in the Animal Kingdom news, is really a rumor. And it's a rumor we want to credit to the Disney Hipsters, which are friends of ours. They run a fantastic podcast.
Two of them, actually.
Now they have two of them, which I am all for, because it is really one of my favorite shows. If you don't listen to it, listen to it. Look it up. They broke a rumor, about a week ago?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, I think. Something like that.
And it's been a rumor that has been kind of in the pipeline for for a while. At least in some way, shape, or form. And that is that they believe, and they have on good authority, that the powers that be are close to signing off on a project that is a water parade, a nighttime, park closing type of water parade, and that they are close to moving in on this. Like, this is something that can go into a test phase quicker than you might think, especially when you think of how, you know, far in advance some of these things can be, how long it takes for stuff. I mean, look, we've been listening to Avatar stuff for a year and a half now and still see nothing.
Well,
and it seems like this particular event is something that, you talk about a little bit more, something that might happen within a year?
I would assume that if they do sign off on it, and if you do hear something about it, let's say at D23 at the end of August, or the middle of August, or whatever it is, you probably wouldn't see it until the following summer, because they do have to test it, they do have to do various things. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Disney is kind of slow with this kind of stuff. They were testing the Wilderness Explorers game in September 2011. It was not until 18 months later, that, or more than that, that they actually released it. And that's just the game with cards and you know, it's not exactly tech heavy.
Right.
And badges and stickers. And I mean, that's not really, you would think that once they tested it about a week later, they could have released it.
Right.
So, I mean, and this, from what the Hipsters were telling me, was it's going to be projection technology on sails. The rumor, and I know Jim Hill had this rumor, and a few years ago or whatnot, would have been a lantern light parade on the water going around Animal Kingdom. That was the big thing. This to me makes a bit more sense, just because Disney seems like they're in love with projection technology. I mean, they put it They put Mike Wazowski on Spaceship Earth.
Right.
They do all that stuff on the Cinderella's castle.
Right.
They just announced, I believe, that they're doing a major like projection type of show. It's either in Paris or Tokyo or Hong Kong or somewhere overseas. I forget where. So they love this type of technology, and it just makes sense to sort of scale it down. You know, they're not projecting it on a huge castle. Instead, it'll be individual sails on boats as they go around Discovery Island.
Now, this has been something that in one shape or form we've been talking about at Disney's Animal Kingdom for a long, long time. I mean, you know, Animal Kingdom people and Imagineer, and, you know, everyone involved in the process of sort of reporting rumors and stuff like this has always kind of come back to this idea of what's going to be the end of day event
right.
at this park. And the lantern thing we've heard a lot because we all know we can't have fireworks, okay? We can't blow off explosions with a lot of animals lying around or trying to sleep and doing things that they need to do at night. So we know we can't do that. So what else is it going to be? I've put forward ideas of different kinds of parades, and that really seems to be the only option, some kind of parade.
The only other thing they could have done would have been to build a theater that was separated off,
like
Fantasmic.
Like Fantasmic, right.
But in that instance, well, Fantasmic does have a little kind of fireworky type of things going on. But you could do like a Wonderful World of Color type of thing right. off to the side. That's the only other possibility, really.
But this looks, I mean, we haven't seen any concept art yet. And I you're only kind of getting sketchy things. But there's a couple of things that this does. One, it doesn't interrupt, how do I put this? There's nothing needs to be built. So therefore, there's no theming that's going to be thrown away so that we can build a big, ugly theater in the middle of wherever. OK, so, and unless we were going to make a parade themed to one of the lands, if we're just going to do something Disney animal type, we don't even know the subject matter yet of this parade, I don't think.
No.
This gives them the opportunity to do almost anything and not interrupt the aesthetic flow of the rest of the park.
The only thing I would tell you. Is I'm pretty sure the hipsters put this out there on their podcast, was from what they have heard, it would not have anything to do with Avatar. It would be more your basic Disney kind of theming. Now, I think it's more Lion King, Jungle Book than Avatar, thankfully.
Yeah, and I think that was a fear of a lot of people when they first heard it, was that it would be somehow related to the Avatar project because when you think of something being announced now and the kind of the timetable that these guys have been throwing around in various board meetings and stuff and, various, shareholder meetings and things like that, it seemed like it almost lined up with the Avatar kind of.
Yeah.
But now it looks like this will come out beforehand. The other thing that I like about it is that the Animal Kingdom has a spectacular waterway. I mean, it is gorgeous, and it is the best use of water, I think, in any of the parks. And to finally put it to use to something good is, I think, what a lot of Animal Kingdom fans have been kind of clamoring for since they first rode the Discovery Island riverboats
right.
and scratched their heads at the end of that one, because it is such an impressive waterway. I know a lot of people are concerned about viewing. I'm not really concerned about that. I see where people are talking about, but there are a lot of places in that park you can see the water. And if it means pruning back a couple of trees here and there to get a better view, that's all it really takes if you get right down to it.
Well, they could definitely build more areas. For example, like where Camp Mini Mickey is, they have it set off where you can't really see the river from anywhere in Camp Mini Mickey. But presumably, if Avatar or whatever goes there, I mean, we're all obviously still thinking it's Avatar. They can build it so that there's, viewable areas from the water.
Right.
And you could do that in other spots, too, where build more stuff down by the water, behind the Tree of Life, perhaps, where those paths are.
Right.
And where you can get to tuck, it's tough to be a bug. You can maybe build a path or two that leaves like a little landing down by the water. You could stand there and watch it. I mean, there are places I think you could definitely even add to the viewing.
Oh, yeah, and there's a couple of landings there, too, and the whole area around by Expedition Everest is a huge spot where you can
sure.
do, and the bridge right there that leads over to Dinoland, and then there's a little path that leads right along there, too. I mean, there'll be plenty of spaces to see it. If not having enough room for everybody to see it is their worst problem for this show, that's a good problem to have, because that means people want to see it. So I'm not worried about that just yet, but I am excited to see this. I hope this is true because the D23 event is something that, you know, that where a lot of these things are announced and a lot of fanfare is made for this stuff. And this would be great if the Animal Kingdom was included in that.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, are you going to see this at D23? Are you going to see any kind of inkling as to what they have in mind for Avatar Land? It would be interesting, too.
Well, we could probably do a whole show on what's happening with the Avatar project.
Yeah, we probably should someday.
Yeah, we probably will.
We could have a nice debate.
Yeah, we probably could. All right, so that's all for the local news. We're going to take a short break. Be back with the world news in just a second. At the Jumbo Everyone store, you can purchase fun and stylish apparel and merchandise, all while helping save wildlife. At Radio Harambe and JumboEveryone.com, we are committed to doing everything we can to help our conservation partners who are on the ground working to keep endangered animals from extinction. So with every purchase made at the store, we will donate 50% of the profits to our partners. You'll find t-shirts, hats, iPad covers, tote bags, and much more. And all the items are customizable to fit your size, taste, and budget. We have great Jumbo Everyone logo merchandise, plus some really exciting animal designs featuring cheetahs, rhinos, gorillas, macaws, and zebras. Go to JumboEveryone.com and click the banner for the store and help us in our conservation efforts. Welcome back to Radio Harambe, the very first ever episode. We're now going to pivot to world news. And for that, I'm going to hand it over to our own world traveler, Safari Mike. Mike, what's in the news in the rest of the Disney world?
Sure. So the first news item I want to touch on is we do have more information as to what My Magic Plus is really going to be. We're getting more information about the Magic Bands themselves, which have gone into some testing here towards the end of June. And they've actually started rolling out some of the merchandise that obviously we can inevitably buy to pimp out your or bling out your Magic Bands. You'll be able to get cloth wraps. You'll be able to get charms that you could put on there. Oh, boy. And you can even get these big, almost like watch looking things that you can attach to it. So people can have all sorts of different Magic Bands. I plan on just having my standard, red Magic Band. I don't know if I'm going to go anything crazy with that. And as everybody knows, the Magic Band's going to have your fast passes on it.
Right.
It's going to have your park tickets on it, your room key, and probably scary to parents with teenagers, your room charge will also be right there, right on your wrist for use. The interesting thing, and probably the most important thing for Disney aficionados, is you are starting to get information as to how many fast passes you can actually book, pre-book, and how far in advance. And according to everything I've seen, you have 60 days. So it'll be a 60-day mark where you can start booking what your fast passes are for a particular day. And you only get 3. That's what I've heard. And I've heard rumors that, and this wouldn't surprise I don't think anybody, is that at some point you may be able to purchase additional fast passes for every day. So I'm
not sure. Here we go.
Yeah, I don't really like this at all. I really don't like this at all. I'm not a big fast pass person. I mean,
me neither.
Use like 1 or 2 in the morning. I'm your typical, get to Epcot, fast pass soar and go on test track. And then I tend not to use them after that, really. It's sort of same thing applies to the Magic Kingdom, the Animal Kingdom.
Right.
I will, fast pass safaris and run on Everest or vice versa, depending on what I'm feeling like doing. The only one that I think would really hinder people would be the Magic Kingdom, just because there are a lot of different, I'll fast pass Big Thunder, you can fast pass Space, Splash. Then if you only have 3, you really have to sort of think about it, especially during busy times when Peter Pan gets crazy, Little Mermaid is, he gets huge lines. Of course, the Three Mountains, there are a variety of things that you have to sort of gear towards. The other parks, I don't think it's as big of a deal because, everybody in the studios is going to do Tower of Terror, Rock and Roller Coaster, Toy Story Mania.
Right.
And so that is what we're looking at for My Magic Plus.
Now, quick question for you. I am a annual pass holder. I don't have a band. I got my annual pass, in January of this year. But yet I am planning on going sometime in the fall. We're booked to go in the fall. That's the next time I'm going to be there. Is this something that I, in October, am going to need to be aware of?
I don't think so. It looks like they're going to start rolling. They're only starting testing it now in June, and they have said for the time for a while, they're both systems of fast passes are going to be in play, so that you can do the old system of fast passes, getting tickets, you know, little printouts and stuff like that for a little while. You have to pick one or the other though, so you can't use your Magic Band and do pre-book fast passes for the Magic Kingdom on day one, and then on the Animal Kingdom go to the old ticket system. So you have to pick which one you want. But at least for the time being, both are going to be in play, it looks like.
Now, what is this for? What are they invested an amazing amount of money into this.
Yeah, over $1 billion, yeah.
And so far what I see is part of that investment goes to this is what my practical look goes to putting Fast Pass into attractions that don't need it. Okay, because they have done that. So that is obviously an expenditure that didn't need to be there. So I don't know why that's there. And you already have the ability to charge your room card to whatever you want if you're staying there. So what are they getting out of it?
Well, I think the biggest thing is they saw a lot of bottlenecks at the front gate. In a lot of places, especially during the busy times of the year, it can really be difficult getting into a park. This apparently is going to alleviate it to a great deal. That is probably the biggest thing. I'm not sure.
Does that seem like a $1 billion investment to you?
Well, when you think about it, if you could keep those people in the park a half hour longer than they ordinarily would have been, buying breakfast, shopping or whatever, I think that makes them a happy camper. Now, the other thing is if they start charging people for fast passes, you get the three and then you have to charge more, well, then they're going to start making money because people are going to buy more.
Right.
There are going to be people out there who I don't know how much it's going to cost, but even if you said it was $10 for an extra fast pass, and we already talked about the Animal Kingdom one, I mean, are there going to be people who spend an extra $50 to fast pass everything and be convenient and not have to worry about all this kind of stuff? I think there might be.
Doesn't Universal currently do some sort of pay fast pass thing?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't ask me the details.
I don't know them either. I just know that's something that I've heard people say. So, okay, cool.
All right. The next one is, it's a minor story, except for people who are planning on going to Disney World in fall. But Peter Pan is going down for a pretty long refurb starting on September 28th, and it's coming back Halloween Day. So it's going to be about a 5-week refurb. Now, of course, we keep hearing rumors that the next interactive queue, quote unquote, is going to be in Peter Pan. And, they got rid of the bathrooms. They built those lovely, themed toilets over at the Tangled area. what everybody thinks is being able to clear out the toilets that they have, the bathrooms by Peter Pan and create a whole, interactive queue. Is this it? I don't know. But it is closing for about 5 weeks.
I would be very impressed if they managed to do that in 5 weeks. They don't seem to be able to do anything in 5 weeks when it comes to construction.
Yeah, I mean, you're only talking about an interactive queue.
Right, that's true. That's true.
And maybe they just need the 5 weeks to, how do I put this? Get it underway.
Right.
So, maybe when it reopens on October 31st, the interactive queue might not be ready yet, but they've done what they've had to do to get the, to reopen the ride and get people, get people on that ride before the interactive queue is ready to go, let's say, maybe by Christmas time or whatnot.
Years and years from now, we'll be looking back and saying Disney was the company that invented the fancy toilets.
That's right. If you think about it, Universal is spending all this money on building, new Harry Potter land and all these rides. And what does Disney buy? They've elaborate toilets, interactive queues,
right,
and wristbands.
That's right. Now we're sounding snarky. What's next?
This one's really brief, and I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, but the Rainforest Cafe down in Downtown Disney, not the one at the Animal Kingdom, but the one in Downtown Disney, has finished their refurb. And they now have a new lava lounge, which, looking at it, relatively fine, whatever.
Yeah, it looks cool.
With some lava. But the real cool thing is it has an interrupting volcano. That mountain that sits on top of the restaurant now spews out fire and lava effects, and it's really kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, that does look cool. Not to get into this too much, but I've made a pact with myself and my wife that we are not going to attend Disney Downtown Disney anymore until it's refurbed.
Oh, when Disney Springs relaunches?
Yeah, which I could be waiting. I'm still waiting for Hyperion Wharf. But I decided after a while I was not going to wait for that. But now this one I'm going to wait for. Because it's a difficult place for me. For people who rent cars, and everybody, for people who rent cars, you want to go to Downtown Disney, that's great. You go there. You can't really partake in the lava lounge too much because you're driving. But taking a bus there at night can sometimes be a disaster. It's a difficult thing to do. So I'm not a big fan of Downtown Disney, but let's not get into that too much.
This is news around the world, but, okay.
Right.
And I'll go into the last one here. The number four is the infamous Starbucks has finally replaced Main Street Bakery and is now open on Main Street in the Magic Kingdom.
Okay. Let's go. Let me start by saying this.
Good.
I am perhaps the furthest thing from a Disney purist you will listen to in the Disney podcast world. I am a historian of Walt. I love Walt. I know all about the company. I've read stacks of books, but I am not a purist. I don't think that anything needs to be. So I am not coming at this from that angle. However, this drives me nuts. I understand that the Main Street Bakery had its problems. I understand that the coffee at the Main Street Bakery, as well as everywhere else, is bordering on dreadful. I understand all of those things. This might be something of an improvement. But in my mind, it is, if you could name all the things that they could have done to make the Main Street Bakery better, this is probably the least and worst idea they could have had to improve it. It might be improved. I have no evidence to believe that. I don't see why artisanal breads belong in a turn of the century bakery, but or lattes or what have you. But I understand that ever since we opened the doors to Main Street in Disneyland, over half a century ago, that we have systematically picked away at the theme. And ever since, certainly in the last, since the 80s, we have taken the idea of the theme behind Main Street in the Magic Kingdom, and we have systematically thrown it away. The last few bastions of what was a great Main Street were Casey's. The restaurant just went out of my head around the corner from the bakery.
The Plaza,
and the Main Street Bakery. Those were the last three things left. Right, everything else has been turned into an off-the-shelf Disney store. All the other cool things are gone. Those were the last three things left, and now we're down to two. And if they wanted to get – again, I'm going to rant too much about this, and I want to stop myself because I hear a lot of people apologizing for it and a lot of people ranting about it too. It's a very controversial thing, But I of all the things they could have done, this is what they had. They couldn't find a coffee company to provide better coffee.
I thought they did. No, Jobs is coming everywhere.
Well, there you go. So we don't do that. How about we hire a really good baker to come in and reinvent the bakery? Some world-renowned person in that field, in the dessert field or what have you. Why hand it over to Starbucks? Which, if there is anything that doesn't fit turn of the century Main Street, it's Starbucks.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still a theme park.
I understand it's a theme park, and I understand that it's a good that it's an well, I don't know this, but it might be an improvement. It certainly is an improvement from the coffee side of things. And all these bakery items are available in 1,000 other places. I know that. But
here's my problem with Starbucks. I have no issue with them replacing Main Street Bakery with the Starbucks. I really don't. You know, they want to serve coffee, that's fine. To be honest, I very rarely went to the Main Street Bakery. It was always so crowded. But what they have done is taken away a lot of the baked items that you sort of don't find anywhere else. I mean, people talk about the cinnamon rolls.
Right.
And the cinnamon rolls were huge at the Main. Everybody loved the cinnamon roll. They would stop at Magic Kingdom, and while everybody else was running to Space Mountain, no, my family, we would always stop and have a cinnamon rolls at the Main Street Bakery.
Right.
And people who say, well, you know, you still get them at Gaston's, but you don't. It's a different thing.
Right.
It's not the same cinnamon roll. I'm sorry.
See,
so it's not the same thing. Most of, from what I've seen online, most of the items there are typical Starbucks kind of things.
Off-the-shelf Starbucks stuff. Absolutely.
Right. Not fresh, you know, Disney type of baked goods like the cinnamon roll. So that's my biggest beef. I mean, why not? I mean, you could have put... You could have kept the cinnamon. If they just would have kept the cinnamon rolls, I probably wouldn't have been complaining about this at all. And why not? Why not put it? I mean, there are places you can actually put a Starbucks and not affect.
Oh sure.
Well, this was not my cup of tea, so to speak. I mean, but I, you know, you hear a lot of people who would always go to the Main Street Bakery first thing in the morning and have their breakfast.
Right.
Which,
right.
You know, that's their thing. That's fine.
Why not put the Starbucks?
I mean, you had an empty space over in Adventureland.
Sure.
What's the name of that? There used to be the restaurant there, but now they do meet and greets right over the bridge. You could have put it there without affecting anything.
Right.
That's the only beef I really have. Well, why not put it there?
Why not
put it somewhere in Fantasyland? I mean, there's a store you could have cleared out and made a Starbucks.
Why does it have to be in the Magic Kingdom?
Well, even if they signed some sort of deal where Starbucks gets one in each park, there's one coming to the Animal Kingdom sooner or later.
Which is fine.
Right, but why affect Main Street Bakery? Like in Epcot, they're putting it at that stupid place in Inventions that I can't think of the name of, and nobody cares.
Yeah.
That they're removing the Tomorrowland. What do they call it? I forget what it's the whatever.
Terrace.
Who cares? And nobody went there anyway. That's fine. That could be a Starbucks. Nobody's going
to
care.
And you could put it in Hollywood Studios anywhere. That's a themed mess to begin with. So you could stick a Starbucks on any corner and it would be fine.
Well, the problem I have with the Hollywood Studios is I'm concerned. I'm not sure if this is really a concern, but I hope they don't replace the Writer's Stop over by Muppet Vision. I like that little store.
Oh, I'm sure they will. That's exactly where it'll go.
Yeah, that seems like that'll be the one. And I've actually gone in there. Because I don't really spend much time in the studios, and I usually never eat food there.
No.
But what I do is after doing like Star Tours and stuff, I go over to a Writer's Stop, have a cup of coffee, and I know the kids like some of the baked goods there, and we have sort of like a late breakfast kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, before we hightail it out of there to Epcot or Animal Kingdom or whatever. So I'm concerned they're going to replace that. That's like the one place I actually like to go
in
the studios to grab a bite to eat. Because I doubt they'll remove the starring roles, but maybe that's what they do. And then you'll see if they remove starring roles, you'll see an uproar about that too.
Well, and here's just to kind of sum up the argument that people have against, you know, for and against this, right? The biggest thing that people say for it is this stuff like there wasn't enough room there, the lines were too long. The coffee stinks. There was only a couple of baked items. You couldn't get lunch. You know, you didn't need seating. All these things. I agree with every single one of those. That does not mean I wanted Starbucks on Main Street. Again, it's just that one little detail. Make the thing better. Stop handing everything over to somebody else. When I come to Disney World, I don't want everything to be the stuff I've been getting at home. And this is just another thing that we're handing over to somebody else we couldn't fix this. Take it, Starbucks. Make us a lot of money. And that's what I don't like about it. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with our feature little discussion here on touring the parks in crazy busy days. We'll be back. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And She's as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jumbo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to jumboeveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Welcome back to Radio Harambe, the very first ever episode of Radio Harambe. We do plan on doing this at least every other week. That may change as time goes on. We'll see how we get along with the whole idea of broadcasting live from above the Savannah here. So for our final, I'm Dave McBride, by the way, your host. With me is my co-host somewhere in the world, Safari Mike. We are going to just...
I'm in Borneo, actually.
Borneo, excellent.
I'm in Borneo. How many people? I just saw a couple of orangutans.
Excellent. I was going to say, I wonder if I could poke that on the map.
But I think every week I'll come from someplace different.
I think I can.
This time it's Borneo.
Borneo sounds great this time of year. Probably hot, right?
It's Animal Kingdom hot.
Yeah. That's another one I never understood. I've never been hot in the Animal Kingdom, but maybe I'm there at the wrong times of the day. I don't know. So for our final feature here, we're going to talk a little bit about July 4th weekend is coming up. Hopefully this will be out in time for, middle of the July 4th week. And we wanted, this is a big, busy, busy time of year for Torin, Walt Disney World, and for Torin Animal Kingdom as well. And we wanted to talk about specifically the Animal Kingdom and touring it during really busy times of the year. And this being one of them, this could also be helpful for when you're going in Christmas, which is a similar but a different animal in a lot of respects. So we'll try to focus on the summertime and give us the tips that we have. I'll start off. The first tip I would say is a tip I'd give to anyone, anywhere, at any time going to Walt Disney World is get there early. Get there when that rope falls so that you always have a window, no matter what time of year, from what I understand, because I haven't been there on Christmas Day, so I don't know. Maybe that's the exception, but or July 4th might be as well. But you always have a window for the first hour where people are making their way to it. Disney's Animal Kingdom opens at 7 a.m. on July 3rd. It opens at 9 on July 4th. And I think on Monday it opens at 8 a.m. for extra magic hours. So if you're a resort guest, take use of those. The early extra magic hours are a godsend at Animal Kingdom, for me at least. Get in the park, get early as you can. And would you agree with this? Go grab a fast pass for one of Everest or Kilimanjaro Safari and then immediately go get online for the other.
Absolutely. I mean, that is absolutely the way to do it. And I would do it where you grab, send if you're in a party. So the problem is if you're in a party of like, five, six people, some kids, maybe some older people, whatnot, send the fastest hoofer over to Everest to get your fast passes for everybody and have them come back to meet you at the safari. Safari is always better first thing in the morning. So you want to do that first, I think. So get the fast passes for Everest, send somebody to get them for you, and then go meet up at the safari. That's what I would do.
Okay. So we're agreed on that. That's the first thing. Get in there, get early, get the two big ones done. Then if for no other reason, then if you get them out of the way early, well, there's two reasons. For one, Kilimanjaro Safaris is best when it's not the middle of the day because the animals are up and around and moving. And it's a much more exciting ride first thing. And,
right.
And the second thing is, at this point, you're starting to free up your afternoon from lines. So when the crowds are really piling up and when it's getting hot out there, you're not going to be standing on the two biggies. And that makes a big difference in how you go from this point forward, I think.
I agree with you. And then when you're done with the safari, you get over to Everest. If you have time, take a walk through the Pangani Forest first thing in the morning, because that's a lot of fun in the morning. Again, the animals tend to be active. And then head on over to Everest for your fast pass.
And then what would you do from there?
What I would probably do is during the real busy times of the year, I would probably go over to Dinoland. and do sort of a mini Safari Everest kind of combo there, and grab fast passes for a probably Primeval Whirl, and then run in Dinosaur. And the only reason I say that is because if they're doing the fast passes for Primeval Whirl, is Primeval Whirl, you're outside, you're underneath, it's kind of a closed in, but you're outside, so it can get hot
right
during the middle of the day there, while Dinosaur is all indoors. And so even if you're waiting for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, or whatnot, which you very rarely do, but let's say you are, it's at least inside in an air-conditioned building. So I would do that kind of combo.
And I would think that that Primeval Whirl is a slower loader anyway. I mean, I would think even if there's that would be one that would be a little bit difficult to deal with.
That's absolutely true, yeah.
And like you said, it's hot. But we also have to remember, somewhere in here, you have to think about Cali River Rapids. My suggestion would be, after doing Dinoland, see what the Cali River Rapids fast pass time is. I would think in the busiest days, even in the busiest days, we'd only be talking a few hours out. So you might have yourself in your hand a fast pass for a Cali River Rapids somewhere in the middle of the afternoon, which is perfect.
Right. Because by then you're boiling hot and a right. Nice ride on the Cali is good. Absolutely.
Perfect. So if that works out that way, I would do it like that. If not,
one thing I would say about Cali, though, before we move off of Cali, don't do it where right before lunch.
Are you afraid of the temperature change?
Yeah, because pretty much every restaurant, unless you're sitting out in Flame Tree or something like that, but especially if you're going to one of the restaurants like Yak and Yeti, Rainforest Cafe, Tusker House, don't do it right before lunch, because you don't want to be soaking wet. First of all, you don't want to sit around soaking wet in a restaurant. That's number one. But you certainly don't want to do it when the air conditioning is making it like 65 degrees in there. Then that's just not fun.
So now you've gone through the two big attractions, right? The three, if we add Dinosaur to that. You've gone through the three big attractions. You've probably gone through Primeval Whirl, and you might have a fast pass in your hands for Cali River Rapids all before lunch. Now, for the less appreciative Animal Kingdom folks out there, they think their day is done, but you're just getting started. You haven't seen anything yet. And the thing is, everything left to see is all stuff that you can really pace yourself with. You got some great shows, Flights of Wonder, the Festival of Lion King, Finding Nemo. You've got the Tough to Be a Bug. These are all great attractions, and you could schedule your day out. And now you've got an afternoon where it's boiling hot where, hey, you know what? I got to get in the shade at the Dawa Bar for an hour. So right. What? So what? You've done it. You can do it. It's no big deal. You don't have right. You know what I mean? You're not missing anything. That's the beauty of the place.
From here on out, you can plan your day around the three shows, right. Assuming you want to see all three. And I think they're the three best in all Disney World.
I agree.
And the trails. If you haven't seen Pangani yet, if you want to see Maharaja Jungle Trek, definitely take a walk through both of those. The only caveat I would say to both of those things is that when the park closes at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, they'll often close those trails at about 5 o'clock,
right?
To bring the animals in, so you're going to want to do those before them. So keep that in mind. So even when the parks open later, those trails tend to end earlier.
Is that true for Maharaja though? Because I've been a Maharaja pretty late in the day. I mean, if the sun's going to set, then yeah. If it's going to get dark, it closes. But I've been there right. Pretty late in the day, and it's not that. I mean, obviously, the sun setting is not going to be an issue because the park closes at either 7 or 8 o'clock for the rest of the week,
right? Right.
So Maharaja, I mean, I haven't done this in a few years just because of the timing of things and what I'm doing when I'm getting there. But I remember a couple of years back going to the Maharaja Jungle Trek right as the sun was setting, and that was a great time to see the tigers.
Yeah, if the trails are open later than they typically are, and you can always ask a cast member because they always know.
Right.
It really depends on the day. Those are great times because it's always better to see the animals when they first get out or right before they go in. And that's especially true for things like, well, I know, for example, the Bachelor Group of Gorillas at Pangani put on quite a show right before they go back in. So if you can get there at like 4:45 or 4:30, it's great. I mean, you'll see them jumping around, you know, pounding their chest sometimes. I mean, it's really impressive. So, check with the guides because they do close them, you know, it depends on the day and depends on the time. Typically, Pangani closes at 5 no matter what. Maharaja may stay open later, but I would ask.
See, now I think about it like this. My dog tends to be a rug for the day. She does nothing. She sits there and does nothing. But she knows when certain things happen, and she knows when it's almost dinner time or when it's time to go for the walk or what have you. She seems to intuitively know that, and things wake up, and that's what happens here as well. So if you go in the middle of the afternoon to see the tigers, yeah, they're especially in this time of year, they're going to be just sitting there because it's hot and they feel like you feel, except they have the opportunity just to sit and relax in the shade. You don't have that.
Right, and you can plan your day, too, around the shows.
Exactly.
So, you know, there is some overlap. For example, I know the Flights of Wonder has, I think tomorrow has like a 2 o'clock and a 3 o'clock show.
Right.
Festival of the Lion King has a 3:30 and 4:30 show. You can't do Flights of Wonder and then get over to the Festival of the Lion King that quickly. The only thing I would say is make sure you do not do the 4:30 Festival of the Lion King show. That is the one. So the Mickey's Jammin' Jungle Parade is at 3:45, and it clears out past the Festival of the Lion King area like by about 4:10, something like that. It's through, you know, it's past that, you know, turnoff. Everybody and their brother then goes to Festival of the Lion King. What they do. So avoid the 4:30. That's the most crowded Festival of the Lion King showing of the day. But other than that, just plan your day around the different shows and the different trails. And just plug in the stuff as you go along.
And I think also a thing about the Jammin' Jungle Parade is that if you're, you know, you're an hour away from what you want to do and you're thinking about it, the Jammin' Jungle Parade does really bottleneck things up. So it's difficult to get around the park at that time. So if you don't want to see the parade, don't be planning on rushing to a fast pass on the other side of the park and going through that area, because it's, you know, it's difficult. It's almost impossible to get through that area when the Jammin' Jungle Parade's going on.
That's very true. That's very true. The positive side of the Jammin' Jungle Parade is that, unlike the Magic Kingdom parades, you usually don't have to stake out a spot a half hour ahead of time. You'll see people doing it, but it's the kind of parade where you could just sort of happen on if you want and just watch it go by and then go do what you want to do.
And remember, the Finding Nemo the musical is an indoor, air conditioned. It's probably about 40 minutes long, right? Somewhere right in there. I forget the number off the top of my head, but
I don't know the number off the top of my head either.
Yeah,
but
it's like in the 30-minute area.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I know some of the shows stagger only about an hour apart, so they got to clear. It's less than 45 minutes.
Right. So, you know, middle of the afternoon is a great time for that. it's a good time to go and sit and relax in that and watch a great show.
And the Lion King is also air conditioned.
Lion King is also the same way. Yeah. And finally, I give my last tip. Now, you can throw a couple else out there if you also have a couple. I would say that I would book myself the latest dinner I can at one of the sit-down restaurants, because the sun's starting to go down. You go to dinner, and you can walk out of the park when it's almost empty. And I've done that twice before, and I'll tell you, that's a slow walk I take going through that park, because you really, if you get a chance to be, especially if the sun's still out, you're coming out of a 6 o'clock reservation, the park closed at 7, it's 7:30 or so, and you're walking out of the place, you really get some spectacular photos there if you're a photo taker.
Yeah, well, and if you do that, don't do Rainforest Cafe, because that's not going to help you at all.
Exactly. Do the the Tusker House or Yak and Yeti. Those are, you know.
That's it.
Those are the two places. It's not hard to get reservations for those. They tend to close a little earlier. They don't, from what I understand, especially now, they don't do the thing that Epcot does, which is to take reservations pretty much up until the time the park closes, so that you're there almost until, you know, 11 o'clock at night sometimes.
You could be there a couple hours afterwards. Yeah, they don't do that.
They don't do that here, but they do their last reservation. If a park closes at 7, probably around the 6:30 range.
Right.
And so by the time you're done, the park's empty.
Yeah, it could be 8 o'clock or so. It could be almost an hour after closing time.
Anything else you want to add there?
Well, the only other thing I would mention with this is that, you know, the new Adventures Outpost does change things a little bit from what we were talking about before.
Yeah, good call. I did have that written down here to see what that was all about.
Yeah, it is real new, and it's hard to judge. It is starting to get lines. The Camp Mini Mickey stuff, they can get lines too. So you got to be aware that. So if you have small kids who really want to meet Safari Mickey, or who really want to meet You know, Baloo and Louie down at Camp Minnie Mickey, at least while that's still open.
Right.
You know, you got to incorporate that, and you probably have to incorporate that early. Until they put fast passes in the Adventurer's Outpost, and then it will again change, you know, what we're talking about.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, I'm not, I don't do the character thing, so I'm not really good at offering that. That's a one little part of the, of trip planning that I really can't help a lot of people with. I have, you know, I know where they are, I know what to do, and you know, you read about them, but I don't do it, so I don't know what, how much time it really takes, and certainly the Adventurer's Outpost is something that's got a lot of press. So it's going to be crowded for this time, I would think.
Right, and the other thing you have to keep in mind now is it's also brand new. If your children are into it, you might want to pick up the Wilderness Explorers thing somewhere along the way and start figuring that out somewhere. You know, after you do the first couple of rides that we were talking about, maybe heading over to Dinoland, you know, find where you want to do is you want to pick it up right at the front of the park, right where. Right by the Tree of Life, over that bridge, I believe, is where they're doing it, where that booth is. So before you're heading over to Dinoland, maybe go pick that up, you know, figure it out, and you can do it as you're walking around.
Excellent. And so that's it? We got it? This is how to do it? We got it done. Listen, everybody, thank you for listening to the first episode of Radio Harambe. I want to make sure that if you've downloaded us on iTunes, please subscribe to the show. Leave us a review there. That is really a big help. It doesn't seem that way unless you're in the podcasting world, but the reviews actually help to get listenership. Also, visit our website, which is jomboeveryone.com. We have attraction reviews. We have dining reviews on there. We have an unbelievable amount of photographs on there. Also, we have what's called the Jombo Everyone Conservation Effort, which is our way of trying to raise funds for five different conservation partners who are kind of on the ground doing work to save wildlife from extinction. And we want to do everything we can. You can buy t-shirts and stuff. You can book vacations, all these things. So go to jomboeveryone.com and click your way through to conservation. You'll see all the different ways we're helping to raise money for these organizations. You can also go straight. We also encourage anyone to go straight to their websites through us. We get nothing for it. All the money that you would donate to them goes straight to them. So I think we're just about done here. Safari Mike, thank you very much. Back to Borneo.
I'm going to go chase down those orangutans right now.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Quaharini.
Take care. Now,